Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
On this episode of the Oklahoma Breakdown with Iker and Lehman, presented by Riverwind Casino, we continue our breakdown of OU's roster with the quarterbacks. Then NFL draft analyst Matt Miller joins us to talk about the OU guys and the other biggest questions of this year's NFL draft. And we finish with our winners and losers of the week. Please download and subscribe to the podcast, rate it 5 stars, and write us a good review. Follow the show on Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube. Just search Oklahoma Breakdown on any of those, and you'll find us. All right, our man Michael Hosty will kick this thing off. It's time for the Oklahoma Breakdown. It's a beautiful Wednesday, March 27th, and you're listening to the Oklahoma Breakdown with Iker and Lehman, presented by Riverwind Casino. Riverwind is Oklahoma City's premier casino experience, and there are so many reasons why Riverwind is consistently voted OKC's number one casino, but it all starts with their amazing variety of gaming thrills and excitement. Riverwind's beautiful award-winning environment plays host to more than 2,800 of the latest electronic games, with a huge selection of table games, including blackjack, blackjack match roulette, and Teddy's favorite, craps. No matter what your game, Riverwind has it in spades and hearts. And to learn more about their gaming promotions and entertainment options in the month of March, all you got to do is visit Riverwind.com. Riverwind Casino, simply the best. Now recording this Wednesday morning, please leave us a 5-star review and a nice comment. Also, if your business wants to advertise on the podcast, you can email us at theoklahomabreakdown@gmail.com. Ted, it's time to talk quarterbacks, baby.
Let's do it. I'm excited. It's a good group.
And things are moving quickly. The NFL draft is less than a month away, so we've got Matt Miller, who is my favorite NFL draft analyst, on to talk about the OU guys and some of the biggest questions of the draft coming up. So that's going to be a lot of fun as well. But like always, let's start with the Oklahoma football stuff, and we continue our breakdown of OU's roster with a rather important position in football. Some would say the most important. And Ted, I wanted to start the conversation with a question. And it's not an easy question. And it may require an uncomfortable answer. Is OU in a better situation at quarterback right now than it was a year ago?
No.
That's how I feel as well. And I don't think it's an indictment on Jackson Arnold or Casey Thompson. I just think that it's a compliment to the stability Dylan Gabriel brought to that room a year ago. And you kind of knew what you were getting with him. With Jackson Arnold, you know that the ceiling is so high, right? Much higher than what the ceiling was for Dylan Gabriel. But the question of where the floor is still the mystery.
Yeah. No, it's to be expected. I mean, I don't know what's Dylan Gabriel going into his seventh year of college football this season, it feels like. He's played a ton of ball and done it at a high level. And Jackson Arnold just doesn't have a whole lot of experience. So, you know, he's had, I don't know what, this will be their fourth practice, fifth practice, something like that, as a starting quarterback. And then what he got during the bowl preparation, that's it. You know, there's just not a lot of experience there. Now, I like what we've got, you know, at the backup quarterback position. We'll get into that, but we just don't know with Jackson Arnold. We have educated guesses. He's bigger than Dillon Gabriel. He's faster than Dillon Gabriel. He's got a stronger arm than Dillon Gabriel. He runs the football better than Dillon Gabriel. He could do, like, he has the potential to do all of those things. But until you see it on the field in live bullets, and he gets, you know, the more passes he completes, the more proper decisions he makes at the line of scrimmage, game management, critical moments of the game, how does he handle the clock, how does he handle the offense, like, you have to build a portfolio of those type of moments before we can really feel comfortable about what we've got. I think it's totally fair to say that the ceiling with Jackson Arnold is higher than Dillon Gabriel, and that's saying something. But we, like you said, we don't know where the floor is. Well, hopefully we do know where the floor is.
Right. Now, a couple of positive things, positive developments throughout the winter and now into spring ball. He's gotten way more comfortable being a vocal leader. And that just comes with being the guy, whether you like it or not, right? That's just what you have to do at that position. You have to step up because every guy is looking towards you because you're the starting quarterback. I think the next step for him, especially with how some of these practices have gone early in spring ball, I think the next step for him is just finding a higher level of consistency on the practice field. If you do that, if you practice at a high level, if you take care of the football in practice, if you make plays in practice, you're going to make plays on game day. That's usually how it goes. Now, that's not 100% of the time. There's guys that are just gamers.
Well, there's way more guys that are really good practice players that are really good game players than there are guys that suck at practice and are good on game day. There's usually a very strong correlation.
No doubt about it. Now, I don't think nothing will inspire more confidence than him putting good day after good day after good day, stringing them together on the practice field. Like, that's what will inspire confidence from his teammates. You know how it is, man. All the other guys on the offense, hell, all the other guys on the defense are paying attention. So he's still a little up and down when it comes to his consistency and his decision-making. And he's not going to be perfect. He's still very inexperienced, but you just have to continue proving it each and every day and improving each and every day. And I know that sounds so cliche, but that's just the truth. And there's a lot of change around him with Seth Luttrell and Joe John Finley taking over at co-OC, Kevin Johns coming into the mix. How do you think he's handled that change, Ted?
Sounds like he's handled it well, you know, and it hasn't been a, like, rip the Band-Aid off total overhaul of the offense. They've been able to, you know, slowly change the things that they want to change over some bowl prep and then throughout winter workouts whenever they get time with the coaching staff and then now in spring. So it's not learning an entirely new offense. There's a really good base to build from, and it sounds like he's done a really good job. And I think the progression is going to be really quick with him. I mean, the amount of the direct coaching you get as a starter compared to a second string guy is probably like 90% of the direct coaching. As a number two, you have to be very good at watching the guy in front of you on film and absorbing, listening to the coach correct and coach the guy in front of you and filter those things into your own play. Like, as he's coaching him, you know that same thing applies to you, but it's all going through a filter. It's when you are the guy and you're watching yourself on film you know, 90% of the snaps, you're getting the direct coaching out there on the field. Coach is coming to you as a backup. You got to step out there on the field. What's he saying? What did he do on that one? It was, you know, you're not sure. Maybe was he right? Was he wrong? But that coach is out there talking to the starter. Like, that coaching is critical. So I expect, like, totally different guy at the start of the season next year than what we saw, you know, in the bowl game. But I hope he has a really bad spring game, because that's typically indicative of a good season coming up. Like, we need a bunch of panic through the offseason, right? I remember Kyler's spring game. It was like, oh, my God.
The weather for that spring game was awful.
Right.
But I really hope he plays decently in the spring game. Actually, you never know. Him playing poorly in the spring game would be best for content.
That's right. That's
People
right.
Would be drawn to it. But I really hope that we see some improvement from him the rest of the way here in spring ball.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
And this is something I was thinking about. I was going back and thinking about what Venables would do early in spring ball when he was the defensive coordinator when I was playing. I wouldn't say he eases into things is maybe the fairest way to put it. And especially with as veteran of a group as he's got at the linebacker level and in the secondary, you can throw a lot at a young quarterback very early in spring practice. And I think it's an interesting situation for him because you've got this experienced defense that allows you, your starting point in spring is just much, much further down the road than probably where they're at offensively right now with young quarterback.
The same defense that Dylan Gabriel saw his first year and the second year.
No. They are starting. The starting point is much different. So, you know, they're working on disguises. They're working on simulated pressures. They're working on bringing pressures. They're getting real creative, I assume, early. But you've got Jackson Arnold. You've got this young and experienced quarterback. Basically, what I'm saying is there's a fine line between throwing a lot of looks at him and getting him ready to play and throwing too much at him. And I don't want to say ruining his confidence, but really testing the durability of his confidence.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's a great point and one that I hadn't really thought of. I think it's probably going to change the way that he's talked about or viewed, even from the coaches. You know, you go out and you have a day of practice and you make some plays, but some other stuff's really tough. I mean, the last thing that they think about is, well, how much better is this defense compared to, you know, what we've seen over the last couple of years? I mean, they'll think about that some, but if if we get word that he's out there in some of their scrimmages and stuff, carving up the defense, I mean, that's telling you that something special is happening.
On the other side of things, if you start hearing things like, ah, he's throwing it to the defense a little too much, you can probably understand it, but you hope it gets corrected over time. Mm-hmm. So that's, there's this balance that Venables is going to have to find of, hey, let's get this defense, start working on getting it to the highest level it can be at. But also you want your starting quarterback, your young and experienced starting quarterback, to have a productive spring and come out of there feeling confident. I know that it feels like those two things are working against each other, and I've got a feeling I know which side Venables would choose if he had to make the choice. But it's just, it's an interesting conversation.
Yeah, it is. And I agree, and I'm glad you brought it up. I wonder how Jackson Arnold, he probably doesn't really think about it. I mean, as a player, you rarely do. But it's going to be, it's good to practice against a squad that's going to be really good, is basically what I'm getting at. And as long as he does, you know, maintain that confidence, because you ain't going to see a defense like ours until, I don't know, pretty far down the road. I mean, there's some teams that are going to have a chance to be pretty good. Like Tennessee's going to have some athletes on defense. Texas is going to have some guys. They're coached really well. But like, I think our defense should be like one of the best in the conference next year.
I think that's the expectation. So we'll continue to monitor how Jackson Arnold is progressing during spring. Where does the QB conversation go next? Is it Casey Thompson? Is it Michael Hawkins? Right. Casey Thompson not participating in spring, but I'll tell you this, having that guy on the roster makes me feel a whole lot better about the QB room as a whole. Well, where do you think we should go next?
Well, sounds to me like old Mike Hawkins has got off to a really quick start, and they like what they've seen from him. He's running with the number twos. You know, it's interesting. They've got I forgot all about this until yesterday, but we got the helmets with the speakers in them. So, like, that's a new thing for the offense. It's a new thing for the defense. There's going to be a bit of a learning curve there, but you know, you've got Mike Hawkins and Jackson Arnold, the two guys that have the speakers in their helmets right now. And I think Hawkins has stepped pretty firmly, perhaps, into that number two role right now with Casey Thompson not being out there. And, you know, I don't know how that battle's going to shake out in the fall, but right now, sounds like he's done a really good job. He's athletic. We all know he can get outside the pocket and make throws. And it sounds like his decision-making has been, you know, quick, accurate, and pretty on point, you know, given how new he is to the system and going up again. There's going to be a fall off in the number two defense, but it's still going to be really good. And, you know, and he's cutting his teeth against them. So I think the reviews so far in Hawkins have been pretty strong.
I think my favorite thing I've been told about Michael Hawkins up to this point is he doesn't do dumb stuff with the ball.
It's a great place to start at quarterback.
I cannot stress how big of a deal that is for a freshman quarterback. And yeah, it seems like they are very high on him. Now, Brennan Zerbrug got a little more size than Hawkins. What, an inch taller? You know, 5-10 pounds heavier, but it seems like he's going to be maybe more of a developmental type of guy. I don't think that he's had the instant impact that Hawkins has had.
Yeah. I think he's probably going to be a guy that's a little bit developmental down the road a little bit, has some really nice tools that they like, probably not getting a whole lot of active reps throughout the spring. I'm sure he's rolling in with the third. I don't know how many groups they're rolling with, but, you know, he's going to have a limited amount of snaps. But you know, he's got time. You know, I everyone obviously wants to come in, compete right away, and you've got these dreams of going out and being the starter. You know, he's just going to have to grind it out, develop, and if you can continue to prepare, and whenever you've got small little windows of reps and availability to go out and do something, if you do the right thing, do it quickly, sharply, and show that you've got some athleticism to you, you can climb the ladder a little bit. And I think that's kind of what it looks like for Zurbrugg right now.
Yeah, I think when you look at, you know, the backup quarterback spot, that all's not going to be determined until training camp when Casey Thompson is back from the knee and healthy. But the assumption is that Casey Thompson's going to be the backup. But with what we're hearing about Michael Hawkins and the way that he looks early in spring, I love the fact that Casey Thompson is going to get pushed for that backup role. And hopefully, in a perfect world, both of those guys are pushing Jackson Arnold to be the starter, right? The last thing you want is Jackson Arnold to feel like, hey, you can't do anything wrong, and I'm going to be the starter no matter what, which that's not the type of mentality, from everything I've ever been told about the guy, that's not the type of mentality he has. But if other guys are practicing at a really high level, it just pushes you to be better. I think Casey Thompson, though, I think he's got a really important role on this team. And I was going back and thinking about, you know, the best dynamics I've seen with backup quarterbacks throughout my career. And I know I am at this point in his career, I am not comparing Jackson Arnold to Matthew Stafford, but I got to see Stafford and Dan Orlovsky work together each day. And Orlovsky, he was such a resource for Stafford. And I think that I'm hoping that Casey Thompson can be that type of resource for Jackson Arnold, like just basically an extra set of eyes for him. He's more experienced. He's played a ton of football, has started a bunch of games in different conferences. Like, he's seen a lot of defenses. I'm hoping that Casey Thompson prepares like he's going to be the starter, because that's what veteran players do. But I think the knowledge he's going to be able to transfer to Arnold, and just being able to help him, like, hey man, what did you see? And I know they got the iPads and the speaker in the helmet and all that stuff now, but it just hits a little differently when it's coming from one of your teammates as opposed to a coach. I just think he can be really, really important for Jackson's development, and just for him to feel supported by the other guys in that room. I think Casey Thompson is mature and he can serve that type of role well. And that type of role is extremely valuable for the development of a young quarterback.
Yeah, I totally agree. At the NFL level, the backup quarterback's almost like a, like an offensive GA to some degree. Like, a lot of the starting quarterbacks kind of outsource the film work and some stuff to the backup quarterbacks. And it's like a, you know, they work really well together in the preparation. And, you know, I think that's probably going to be a big part of it, you know, and I'm sure that he absorbed quite a bit of that from Dylan Gabriel as well. But, you know, it really, he raises the age in that room quite a bit. You know, if he's not there, you basically got, you got Jackson Arnold and Mike Hawkins in there. That's a young QB room. So to add some veteran leadership in there and a guy that gives you a, you know, a really good base to operate from, we all hope Jackson Arnold has a great season, and we're not ever talking about who the backup quarterback is, but as you mentioned, it makes you feel a lot better that you got a guy that's played that much football sitting right there in the room as well.
No doubt about it. Let's get to call your shot. We asked you guys your strongest opinion about OU's situation at quarterback right now. This one comes from Monty Sisko, who says there will be some growing pains for Jackson, but with all the weapons at the skill positions and the expected improved play at the tight end position, I feel this will lessen the burden of his transition and development this upcoming season. Monty, I hope you're right, man. That sounds good to me, Ted.
Well, I don't think there's any doubt, and this goes for every position, not just quarterback, but maybe more so for quarterback. I think there's a chance the wide receiver group is better than it was last year if we get everyone back and healthy and ready to go. I think the tight end room has a chance to be a lot better than it was last year. I think the running back group has a chance to be a lot better than it was last year. Offensive line, what I'm hearing right now, and I don't know about you, there's quite a bit of optimism that that group could end up being really solid. If that's the case, it's going to help Jackson Arnold a ton. You got a bad offensive line. You got no running game. You don't have many playmakers at the skill position spots. Quarterback becomes a hell of a lot more difficult. So it sounds like roster-wise on the offensive side, they're going to be in a good spot, and that definitely is going to help him out.
Yeah, no doubt. We'll see how the O-line continues to come together, and we'll see what that, you know, 5 to 7 guys, maybe you can get to 8 guys that are going to be in that rotation. We'll see who those guys end up being. But I thought this one was interesting. It comes from @JW_Lumley, who says, Jackson Arnold is Caleb Williams without the drama. Is it fair? I feel like Caleb Williams, people are coming after him this week because he had a pink phone case. He's got his nails painted, which he always does. Like, I just don't understand why there's such a strong reaction to Caleb Williams at this point. He's pretty much showed you who he is. But the bottom line is the dude was an absolutely electric football player. I want Jackson Arnold to be Caleb Williams. Give me the drama. I'm fine with it. If he can play like Caleb Williams, sign me up for nearly anything. So I do think that just shows how high the expectations are for Jackson Arnold around here. Sky high.
That's right. I mean, you could say what you want about Dylan Gabriel, but the stats are, I mean, you can look right there. He's one of the front runners for the Heisman Trophy this year. And you just go back and look at the quarterback group, Caleb Williams and Jalen Hurts and Kyler Murray and bunch of $100 million quarterbacks have been coming out of Oklahoma recently. So yeah, it's always going to be a super high level. And yeah, hey, if he's Caleb Williams without the drama, that's fine. As long as he doesn't hold on to the damn football for 10 seconds every snap, then I'm fine with that. If he's got that type of playmaking ability, that type of arm, which, you know, I think he's got a lot of those similar characteristics. So sign me up.
Sign us all up. I'll even take a little more drama. It's not like anything actually dramatic happened with Caleb Williams. What, he cried and some people don't like that he paints his nails. Who cares? If he plays football at that level, Jackson Arnold, he could get face tattoos for all I care. It doesn't matter to me. Like, yeah, face
now
tattoos. I liked your reaction there. You like that idea.
We're talking.
Yeah. See,
I don't know. Have we broken the have we seen that in college football yet? Face tattoo on a quarterback?
I don't think we've seen a successful face tattooed QB yet.
Okay.
Maybe my memory is, maybe we're just missing someone obvious, but no. And I don't know if, I don't think there's any analytics on that. Maybe we could get our stats department on it.
Well, I doubt Jackson Arnold will be the guy for that, but yeah, let's just say that if he plays with any of the characteristics on the field of Caleb Williams, feel really good about it.
Oh my gosh. We're going to be amazing. It'll be going to the playoff if that happens this year. All right, let's talk to Matt Miller. I think he does an amazing job when it comes to his analysis for the NFL draft. Oh my gosh, it is snowing outside.
Yeah.
I'm looking out the window right now. It's March 27th. It's snowing. Wow.
Beautiful. A little awesome. Wintry mix, late March.
This is ridiculous. Thought spring was here, and now it's snowing. What in the world? Let's talk to Matt Miller. But first, Love's Travel Stops is now offering a nationwide 10-cent per gallon discount on gas and auto diesel. Just download the Love's Connect app and scan your barcode at the prompt on screen and watch that price drop 10 cents per gallon. Across the country, the Love's Connect app unlocks exclusive deals can help any traveler plan their route or meal on the highway. So before you hit the road, be sure to download the Love's Connect app to save 10 cents per gallon and experience the country's best highway hospitality at Love's Travel Stops. Love's all says you covered if you forget your phone, charger, or headphones with their expanded mobile to-go zone. And of course, don't forget to grab yourself some of that delicious Java Amore.
And celebrate with a Schooner All-American Ale, the official craft beer of OU Athletics from Coop Ale Works. Named after the iconic Sooner Schooner that races across Owen Field after an OU score, you can join in on the celebration with an ice-cold beer from Coop Ale Works. You can enjoy it at the Palace on the Prairie, at OU Athletic events, at the bar, at the tailgate, and in the comfort of your own home. For more information on Schooner All-American Ale, visit schoonerale.com. Must be 21 to purchase. Please drink responsibly. Schooner All-American Ale, the taste of game day.
And we love Simple Modern. Simple Modern is an Oklahoma-owned company whose mission is to exist to give generously, and they do. Simple Modern has given away millions to more than 100 nonprofit partners in the last 8 years, and they give away at least 10% of profits each year. We love supporting a company that's working to make a difference in Oklahoma and beyond. And Simple Modern products are also the perfect swag for any small business owner. You can customize tumblers, water bottles, and coffee mugs to give to current or potential customers. Check it all out at simplemodern.com. All right, here's NFL draft analyst Matt Miller. It is our pleasure to be joined by the best NFL draft analyst in the game, people. You see his face all over ESPN these days. Matt Miller is in the house. What's going on, man?
Man, I knew I should have wore burnt orange today. I knew it. I knew it. But, you know, I had some other media to do before you guys, and I wanted to look professional. So just know that it's in here in my heart. But I'm happy to be on with probably my two favorite Oklahoma Sooners of all time. So
that means a lot. You are a Longhorn, and maybe we'll touch on that later in the interview, Matt. But I just wanted to jump in to the OU guys with you. And clearly the conversation has to start with Tyler Guyton.
Yep.
It's a very talented offensive tackle class in this year's draft. Where does Guyton kind of stack up amongst the group for you?
Yeah, I mean, he's my number 20 overall player. That has him at like OT4, I think, right now is where he's at. So, but he's in that mix, you know, like Joe Alt from Notre Dame is going to go really early. And then I think it is a question of who goes next. You know, Olu Fashanu from Penn State, we think he's probably the next guy off the board. But, you know, there are a lot of question marks about each of those players. I think for Tyler, you're looking at someone who, you know, something you guys can appreciate, a former defensive lineman, you know, who transitions to the offensive side. He's only got 14 starts in college, but those 14 starts are all really good. And I think you can look at some of the guys he went up against in the Big 12, and he was one of the only people who could handle them. And so the tape is limited, but really good. And so, you know, he's more of like a quote unquote developmental prospect just because he hasn't played a ton of football. And I think that's crucial on the offensive line. You know, it's probably the two positions in football, quarterback and offensive line, where the more football you play, the better you're going to get at it. You're just naturally going to settle in. So that's the big question mark for him. He's not alone in this draft class like that. You know, Amarius Mims at Georgia only has 8 starts. So it's a limited amount of starts for these guys. But, you know, I think he has a, depending on, you know, how the interviews and things go, he's got a great shot to be a top 20 pick.
You think, you know, you mentioned there's some good tackles in this draft that are rated really high. Is this one of those years where you see a kind of a run on a certain position? Like, I guess what I'm saying is, how do you think the tackle position rates this year to where people may be jockeying for positions to scoop one of these guys up?
Yeah, it rates really, really well. And I think, you know, just looking at the way the board stacked this year is interesting. I think I have like 8 offensive tackles that could be drafted in the first round. It's wild how much talent there actually is at the position this year, especially if you add in guys like Patanu from Washington. You know, it's like, hey, he might be a tackle, might be a guard. If you count him, I have 8 tackles in my top 32 players. And then the way that the board falls, when you actually look at team needs, like the Titans at 7. They will be taking a tackle. The Chargers could at 5, honestly. So first tackle could come at 5. Next one at 7. The Jets could certainly take one at 10. You know, so there's a lot of room for teams to take tackles in the top 16 picks is the way it looks right now. And then, you know, even in the 20s, you have a lot of teams that, like the Steelers, need a right tackle, which, you know, Guyton and several of the tackles this year, guys who've only played on the right side. You know, the Steelers could use one. The Dolphins could use a, you know, developmental guy. I think the Eagles have to at least start thinking about like life after Lane Johnson, after watching Jason Kelce retire. It's something that you've got to have in the back of your head. And they've always drafted ahead at positions. I wouldn't be shocked if they did that again this year, but they're Dallas at 24, another team that needs a tackle. So it was a position that kind of got neglected in free agency this year. And there's also a lack of talent out there at the tackle position. So I think that bodes well for not just Tyler, but all these tackles, that they could end up going, you know, even a little bit higher than where they're graded because of that need.
Is Guyton one of these guys that teams look at him and you use the word project, but it's just, he's not fully developed physically. Is it possible that teams could view him as the tackle with the highest ceiling in this entire draft?
Oh yeah, I think so. I mean, because like Alt will be the first tackle drafted, barring a gigantic surprise. But he, you know who he is. He's been at Notre Dame for 3 years. You know exactly what that guy is. You know, they're going to max you out. Same with J.C. Latham at Alabama. They're going to get every bit of football talent out of you at those schools, at those positions. So I think with Guyton, because of the position change and because of the relative newness to the position and his athletic ability, I don't think that would be a stretch. It would be him or Amarius Mims from Georgia. You know, Mims is a similar type guy, but, you know, had to wait his turn behind Broderick Jones, who was a first round pick last year, gets the start this year, has the ankle injury, so he misses some time. I think for Guyton, it's more of like he's a little further ahead, but you still see that upside because he's got really like a rare body type, because the length, he's a lean guy despite how big he is, and you can see it. You see the athleticism of why he used to be on defense, where now it's more like reactive agility, where it used to be that, you know, the explosion. Now he's able to do that and, you know, stay in recovery situations at tackle, which is really impressive.
Might as well stick with tackle. Walter Rouse, you know, transferred to Oklahoma from Stanford. You know, just whenever we were doing our pro day coverage, watching him go through everything, I kept saying, I think he's like the easiest draft pick ever. Now, I don't know how high he goes.
Yeah.
But, you know, the dude is a Stanford graduate, super smart, ton of experience. He's got a, you know, he's pretty athletic, can play multiple spots. Like, what do you think of Walter Rouse?
Yeah, I think, you know, you know exactly who he is. Like we were saying with some of the other guys, when you've gone through Stanford and OU, you've been developed as an offensive lineman over those 5 or 6 years. So that's a good thing for him. I have him right now. I was trying to look at my notes, cheat and look over there. I have him in the 5th round. Some of that's just, you know, limited athleticism, I think is the note that showed up most for me. But, you know, I think there's so much value in finding that third tackle. I was talking to an O-line coach last week, and he's like, you know, we don't draft backup centers, but we'll draft 4 backup tackles. And we'll, you know, because you can find a tackle who can play guard, you can find a tackle who can probably snap the ball a little bit. And it gives those guys a lot more value. And I think he falls into that category too of, you know, super experienced, as you mentioned, a heady player, and has experience at left tackle, could play right tackle, no problem. And so that is going to get you drafted. There's a lot of those guys this year. I think it's the kind of the interesting situation because of COVID year was expiring for some people. You know, so we've got 5 and 6 year players who really had to enter the NFL. And there's a lot of experience outside of the first round of tackle. He kind of falls into that group that's, you know, we're going to put 15 names in a hat and he might go in the 4th round. Whereas a guy I have in the 4th is going to go in the 5th because teams are just going to value that experience a little bit more.
Yeah. I've talked a lot about Rouse on here, Matt, and I'm with you on the athletic limitations, and that's why I would not be shocked to see him starting at guard for some team down the road. Yeah. I just don't know. I don't know how many teams are going to view him as a tackle only type of guy, and we'll see, but he's definitely the type of guy you want to have on your roster now.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Especially that arm length.
Yeah,
you know, like over 35-inch arms, you're probably getting drafted. Like, you just, nothing else really matters at that point. It's like, yeah, we're going to work with that. Well, and when you've been at Stanford and OU with 35-plus arms, you're making the NFL.
I completely agree with that. Now, Andrew Rain's an interesting prospect. He's played a lot of football, had some injuries throughout his career. I thought he had a decent week at the Senior Bowl, but he did not impress at the combine.
Yep.
What's your evaluation of Rain?
Yeah, I put a backup grade on him. I think he's, you know, in that 6th, 7th round range, probably just because of the combine. If we were talking about tape and Senior Bowl, it maybe would have been a little bit higher. I don't have the number right in front of me, but I know he ran above 5.4. So at his, and he's not, if he were 340 pounds and ran a 5.4, you'd be like, okay, that kind of makes sense, but he's not, you know, he's not an oversized interior lineman to where you would expect that. And then his 10 yard split is something that is really important to me for interior offensive linemen. His 10 yard split, I believe, was one of the worst of any of the offensive tackles. So that worries me quite a bit, but yeah, again, you know, he'll get drafted. He's going to play in the NFL. I don't see anything on him that says he's going to slip through the cracks and be a starter, you know, because usually those are the guys, they slip through the cracks because they're a little bit undersized, or maybe they, you know, moved around a decent amount in college, but they have almost like a hallmark trait that you can hang your hat on, you know, like, my God, did you see that guy's 3-cone time? Okay, we know that the short area quickness and balance are going to be out of this world. We'll work with that, because he really came under the bar on all the athletic testing. That's where you start to get in trouble a little bit.
Maybe the most interesting one, or at least around here, that everyone's going to have their eyes on is Drake Stoops. You know,
yeah,
incredibly productive. You know, didn't get a Senior Bowl or combine invite, but you know, there were some good reps that he had there at the East-West Shrine Game. Obviously, like I said, super productive. You know what you're going to get from him. Is there a chance he gets drafted?
There's a chance. And we probably should have started with this about some of these day three guys. This is the shallowest pool of draft talent that I've ever covered. So I think it was last year, the year before, was the deepest, because we had all these guys who lost eligibility or had that extra eligibility from COVID. So this year turned out being the shallowest, because only 54 juniors entered the draft. And so many guys were able to say, hey, well, actually 2020 didn't count for me, so I'm going to go back for one more year. This will be the last year that anyone had that COVID eligibility. So this is a really shallow draft pool. Like, normally I have to cut my list to 700 players. This year I can't find 500. So it's really a different type of year. That's great news for Rouse, Rain. Great news for Drake Stoops, because just your list of players to draft is a hell of a lot smaller this year. And so, you know, we can make all the Nepo jokes we want. That stuff matters. We all know it does. And so having those connections, having the production, all that's going to help. So, you know, if you're the Dallas Cowboys at pick, you know, 243 or whatever, you're like, we got to make one more pick. Stoops. Okay. Yeah. He had a million catches in college. He can be a core special teams player. Yeah. We'll get him on the roster. And there's dudes like that on every NFL team. So this isn't just like hypothetical, like, it happens every year. You know, there was a kid at BYU a couple of years ago who was just like catching passes at Zach Wilson's pro day. He's the punt returner for the Chicago Bears now, I think. So it's like those guys always seem to just like make it in the league. And I think Stoops is that way too. Would have loved to have seen, you know, a combine workout. I was really surprised he didn't make that list. But it was, I think this was the most receivers that had ever been drafted or selected for the combine. So that it's just a numbers game at that point.
Any other OU guys that you view kind of as draftable players? Jonah La'ulu was a guy that turned some heads at Pro Day with his size and length and some of the testing numbers he put up. Isaiah Coe did some good things, but do you have any other Sooners that you think may slip into that, you know, late day three area?
Those are the only guys I've watched so far. You know, peek behind the curtain. This last month, you would think would be like, oh, you're just talking about Caleb Williams every day. I'm actually like watching day three prospects all day, every day to make sure that there aren't, you know, guys like that who pop off at pro day. And I'm like, okay, wait, I didn't have you on my list. Let me add you and, you know, try to watch five or six games and then talk to some scouts to see, you know, what their opinion is, because it's all about time management this, you know, right now. So it's how many days do I spend on a player that might not get drafted? Right. So, I mean, I guess we could talk Caleb. That's one Oklahoma player that we haven't talked to. I don't know.
Oh,
how that works.
You just had to do it, huh?
Well, I actually don't know. You know, some places like Russell Wilson still reps NC State, you know, so I don't know how that works for everyone.
When he insulted Texas, what was that after the season, Ted? He had that after one tweet. All OU fans were like, he may still be
he's
one of us.
Ours.
Let's go.
Yeah. Yeah. I got to talk to Caleb at the combine. It unexpectedly, it wasn't scheduled. He came by the ESPN set and I was the only analyst there. So we talked for a little bit. I'd never spoken to him before. I loved the kid and I didn't have any preconceived notions. I've been, you know, pretty just, you know, staying out of the conversations about who he is off the field, cause I hadn't met him yet, but I absolutely loved him. And everyone I've talked to says the same thing. You know, they said, man, he's like a good kid. And I know things didn't go the way Oklahoma fans wanted them to. I was very happy to see him leave, but you know, it's still like, you know, you've got a guy who was there for 1 year and made a hell of an impact.
Well, I'm interested in like what happens to him in the NFL, because I don't think he developed hardly at all in college as a player.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Yeah.
He hangs on to the ball way too long. He's almost waiting to get outside to scramble to try and create something down the field. Now, I know he's totally capable of staying in the pocket. He's got a great arm. He's got great touch and accuracy. I mean, he checks the box everywhere. I'm just wondering if he is going to go to the NFL and still feel like he can extend every play for 8 seconds. And I'm just curious to see how that develops. Are people worried about that?
Yeah, you have to be. And I think it's the question of, did you do that out of necessity or is that just your game? You know, and that's the hard part. And this is not a shot at Lincoln Riley. I respect the hell out of him as a coach. He's great. His offense produces big plays and great numbers, and he's produced, you know, he'll have three first overall picks at quarterback if you, you know, after Caleb's selected. So, but those guys have struggled in the NFL to some, you know, Baker struggled, Kyler has struggled. And so that offense, while, you know, high octane in college, it's super explosive, doesn't really prepare guys for the NFL. There's a lot of learning that they still have to do once they get there. You know, we could say the same about Cliff Kingsbury's offense. You know, this is something that I've talked to Mahomes about, of like, you know, what was that year one where you're not playing like, and it was like, well, I was kind of learning how to play quarterback, you know, like the tools were there, but I'd never taken a snap under center. I'd never called a play in the huddle. And so for Caleb, like, it might not be that stuff of like, oh, it's the verbiage, but it is definitely going to be, Teddy, that I can't hold the ball for 7 seconds. You know, he had 8 fumbles last year. That's a lot for a quarterback. You don't want to see that. So, you know, he's going to learn that lesson, or he's going to have someone like you tackling him very early in his week one. Whoever the Bears play, they're going to eat him up if he's trying to do that stuff back there. So, you know, you can get away with it to some degree. I'll never forget my scouting report on Mahomes saying the things he gets away with in college, he won't get away with in the NFL. And he does. And I was wrong. But, you know, he's like one of one. You know, it's that he's the dude that broke the mold. So I don't want to say Caleb can't do some of those things, because now there's a precedent of someone who plays like that. But he would be one of two in the NFL who's living like that, getting away with it at a high level.
So I think it's pretty clear at this point that Caleb Williams is going one to the Bears. There's a lot of discussion about the other quarterbacks in this draft class. How do you rank the other QBs that could possibly go in round one, Matt?
Yeah, so I have Caleb pretty firmly in a tier by himself. Then I actually have Jaden Daniels, a little bit of a drop to Drake May, J.J. McCarthy, and then I think Bo Nix and Michael Penix are in there as well. So we probably see four, but we could see as many as six, depending on medicals for Michael Penix Jr. and interviews for Bo Nix. You know, he can make some team fall in love with him, and we see him get drafted a little bit higher. feels like there's, you know, those happen. You know, Mac Jones, Daniel Jones, like there's a lot of guys who, you know, make a team fall in love with them because of desperation. But, you know, I think Caleb's in a room by himself. And then Jaden, you know, I don't know how many people watched LSU this year, but he was the most improved player in the country. Not just the best player in the country, the most improved player in the country. Like, turn that Florida game on when the dude had 600 total yards of offense against an SEC defense. Like, say what you want about Florida. 600 total yards against an SEC defense is pretty damn impressive. And so, you know, what he became as a downfield passer while still being able to utilize the run is just, it's where the game's going, you know, like look at what Lamar Jackson does. Look at what Kyler Murray does. You know, that's who Jaden Daniels can be.
Staying on the quarterbacks for a second. Now we talk about the Caleb Williams and the transition and Lincoln Riley's offense. You know, it was interesting. There's been some chatter that Spencer Rattler, you know, he went to South Carolina and did run an NFL style offense. Yeah. And it sounds like maybe that's caught some people's attention.
It helped him. It really did. And I was at two pro days last week, Ohio State and Michigan. And I ended up talking about Spencer Rattler to an NFL scout. And he was like, you know, the last 2 years really helped him a lot, not just as a player, but off the field. You know, he had to grow up. And I think some of the star studded, you know, like, oh, I'm the number one quarterback in the country. I'm going to be a first overall pick. I'm going to win a Heisman. He had to really kind of take one on the chin when he left Oklahoma, or even when he got benched at Oklahoma, you know, and learn how to be a teammate to maybe, you know, for the first time ever. And I think everything I've heard is that, you know, he grew up on and off the field. He had to learn how to play within structure. He had to learn to get through some reads. So it did help him. I think a year ago we were talking about like, that's a late round pick. Now we might be talking about a third round pick, because after those six that we talked about, there's a pretty sizable drop off. There are still teams that need quarterbacks, and there are still teams that are going to miss out on those top six guys and say, you know, like if you're Sean Payton, do you take Bo Nix at 12 or you draft Spencer Rattler in the third round? You know, like for your offense, which would you rather have, you know? Or, you know, if you're the New York Giants and you know, at six, if you don't get one of the top four quarterbacks at six, you got to add somebody at some point. And so I think Rattler is going to find a good landing spot in a situation like that. You know, don't sleep on the LA Rams. Matt Stafford is a sneaky 36 years old and has had some pretty significant injuries the last few years. The Rams right now don't have a long-term plan after Stafford. So I could see Sean McVay falling in love with Rattler's arm and saying, all right, we can work with this.
Stafford's tricky though, because he just keeps getting better and better looking as
he
ages.
Wild.
Like
wild.
He's so much better looking than when I played with him in Detroit. I'm like, what do you, I guess that maybe comes with living in LA. I don't know, but
I got to move. Yeah.
Yeah. No kid. I'd never mind. I would never move to LA. that's a completely different discussion, but the wide receiver class, so much conversation about not only the top end talent, right, of the guys that are going to go in the first round, but just, it sounds like this is an extremely deep group of wide receivers. Yeah. Just how deep is this draft at wideout?
I've never seen anything like it. And that's like, wide receiver is my favorite position to scout. I've never seen anything like this. I have seven guys in the first round. I have eight or nine guys in the second round. And it's just like, so in my top 100, there's probably 19 or 20 wide receivers. So I've never seen anything like that. And it's fun this year because you have so many different types of guys. You know, you've got Marvin Harrison Jr., who's 6'3", you know, just like, he looks like AJ Green did coming out of college. But then you have, you know, the speed of Malik Nabers and Xavier Worthy, and you've got, you know, guys like Brian Thomas Jr. and Adonai Mitchell, who are like 6'4", running 4.33, and they're these, you know, they look like basketball players the way they track the ball. So there's really something for every team this year, where some years we get a wide receiver class and they're all under 6 foot tall. Some years you get a receiver class and it feels like no one can run a sub 4.4. This year, there's a little bit of everything. So if you're looking for like that true X receiver, several of those guys, you know, if you're looking for a slot guy that's going to just dominate on option routes, those guys exist too. So that's what, not only are there, you know, the three guys at the top who are super talented, Harrison Nabers and Adunze, but it's just the top 100 is littered with really, really good wide receivers.
You touched on this earlier. I just kind of wanted to circle back a little bit. It's not a deep talent pool. how much of that has to do with NIL? Because just like in Oklahoma, yeah. Danny Stutzman, Billy Bowman, two guys that definitely would have been drafted, came back, and NIL had a lot to do with that. Is this something, is this like a short-term trend and it's going to even out, or is this going to be something that's kind of new where the juniors are going to be lighter moving forward than really they've been in a long time?
That's a great question. It's definitely impacting things right now. I mean, you mentioned, I thought Stutzman would have been the top linebacker in this class had he come out. Great for him that he doesn't have to. You know, it used to, like when you guys were in college, I'm sure you had a, and maybe you guys had to, I know you had teammates that had to go to the NFL. They needed the money to go play football. Now it's, I can stay in college and make six or seven figures and work on my game. So it's a huge part of it. You know, Cam Ward enters the draft. It's like, nope, never mind. I'm going to go to Miami. You know, 2-3 years ago, that guy would have entered the draft. And Bo Nix, Jaden Daniels, they would have never stayed in college that extra year, but NIL makes it feasible to do that. So I don't know if it'll be long-term. I feel like NIL, the rules change every month. So I don't really know, like, in a year what it's going to look like, or in 2 years what it's going to look like, but I know it's having an impact right now. In my opinion, it's a good one. You know, guys staying in college longer is great for what I do. It's great for the NFL to have guys who are more developed. You know, I think it's also, you know, we were talking about Caleb Williams. It used to be a guy would get drafted early and you would say, how's he going to handle money? We don't have to worry about that anymore. Caleb Williams made $2 million last year at USC. We know how he's going to handle money. And he already has the framework around him, you know, of like, he's got a finance guy and he's got a, you know, he's got people around him taking care of that stuff. And not just Caleb Williams, all these top players do. So it also, it takes away some of that concern of, oh man, what's going to happen when this, you know, when the first million hits this bank account? It's already hit. So you have that, you know, knowledge now of what guys are living like when they have some money in their pocket.
That's an extremely interesting point, Matt. Now, I always like to ask you, this is a two-parter. Prospect you like more than maybe the other draft analysts, and then maybe a prospect you aren't as high on as some of the other draft analysts.
I know the one I'm not as high on. That's easy. That's Drake May. And you know, I see some folks say like, oh, he's QB1. And I don't know that I work with anyone who says that, but I've certainly seen it. You know, where people are like, oh, he's QB1. I don't see that at all. I think he's more of like a developmental type quarterback. He's got really good tools, absolutely. But, you know, he's got a lot that needs worked on. And I'm afraid he's going to get thrown into like a New England situation where that roster is so bad offensively. And it's going to be like Bryce Young last year, where you're asked to be the savior and you got no answers around you at all. You know, New England has not really done anything in free agency to make me feel better about the offensive line or the wide receiver room, anything offensively. So Drake is the one that I would worry about. Hopefully, you know, like going to the Giants and sitting behind Daniel Jones for a year would be a great thing for him. And working with a Brian Daboll and a Mike Kafka, like that would be so good for Drake May. So hopefully that happens. The guy I like more than everyone else. That's a good question. I'm trying to scroll my list. Probably Quinyon Mitchell, the corner from Toledo, who's had a great Senior Bowl, great combine. He's just checked every box. And it's fun when it's a smaller school, like non-Power 5 guy who dominates everyone when you get to watch him at the Senior Bowl. Because his tape was fantastic. I mean, there was a game in 2022 where he had 4 interceptions and he ran 2 back for touchdowns. You're watching this stuff and you're like, okay, but he's doing it against like Northern Illinois. Can you really, like, does that work against LSU or does that work against Alabama? You see him at the Senior Bowl. No one could get off the line of scrimmage against this dude. So then we go to the combine. He runs a 4.33 at 6 foot, 200 pounds. And then the next day he reps out 20 bench reps at 225. It's like, right? Like, who does that? And so he's just handled the process really well. I should have looked what your reps were at the combine.
I think I did the same as Mitchell. I'm not proud to say that, but
your arms are a lot longer. You got to remember that.
Whatever you need to tell me to make me feel better. Thanks, Matt. Yeah. Now, there's so much conversation about the QBs, the wide receivers, and the offensive tackles, and rightfully so. Right? There's a ton of talent in those groups, but who's your favorite defensive player in this draft?
Oh, Dallas Turner, without a doubt. Dallas Turner from Alabama, which maybe that's cheating because he plays at Alabama and he's really, really good, but he's the guy that when I watch, I just think he's going to be a really good NFL player right out of the gate because he's got awesome first step quickness. He uses his hands well. He has really good length. So he's a finished product. He's just a little undersized. He's 245 pounds. Put 10 more pounds on him, and it's, you know, picture perfect. So hopefully, you know, he gets into a spot like Atlanta at 8, I think would be great for him to where he can develop a little bit. Chicago at 9 would work just as well, but he's going to be a good player.
Last one. Was it harder to enjoy Texas going to the college football playoff knowing that you lost to OU?
No, it wasn't.
I'm just
that
messing.
OU game, man, the OU game, this is a true story. I went and watched it with some of my friends. They're all Texas fans as well. And my wife she's in nursing school. So she was doing like some homework and stuff. And it's like when the game was over, she was going to pick me up from this bar we were at. And she and I were going away for the weekend to celebrate her birthday. And at halftime, I'm like, this is going to be the greatest weekend ever. It's going to be great. And as you know, it ends up being a pretty bad game. So then wife and I go out of town for her birthday, celebrate it. And I like, it's all right. I was able to be mature and put it aside. I swear on my children that this happened. So fast forward, Texas makes the college football playoff. And we had already booked to go out of town again to the same damn place to camp in the mountains in Arkansas. Same damn place. So I get to watch Texas lose to Washington in the same place I was the night after Texas lost to Oklahoma. So we're never going back to that place, obviously, but it was enjoyable. Heals. You know,
that's where you want to be, to heal and to get the mind and spirit back together.
That's true. That is true. But you know, like, you know, this Gabe, I'm a Royals fan. And so that teaches you how to suffer. And it also gives you perspective of sometimes you just got to be happy you made it and not even care, you know, like, when the Royals made the World Series in 2014 and lost to the Giants, I was just happy to be there, you know? So that's how I try to look at it now.
Well, at least you got Bobby Witt Jr. signed up, man. At
least. Yes, that's all. Can't wait.
And I know you know this, but
in 3 days, can't wait.
He's got OU roots too, man. OU surrounds your life, whether you like it or not, Miller.
I know, man. It's my daughter just got a job in Oklahoma, and I'm like, really? What? Really? Why? Come on now. So
yeah, and Lorenzo Cain is my neighbor.
Oh, well, there we go. So yeah, it's all right. I love you guys 364 days out of the year. So
I love you, man. You're the best. I'm so excited for your success, man. You earn it. You work extremely hard and do a fantastic job. So love seeing your face on ESPN all the time now, man. You're killing it. We appreciate the time. Thanks, man.
Yeah, of course. Anytime, guys.
Man, I think Matt does an awesome job, Ted.
Yep, he does. Hopefully we see, you know, I think there's a chance because of that low talent pool, like he was talking about, I think there is a chance that maybe we see some guys sneak into the draft later. That's the hope anyways.
Yep. Got a streak to keep alive. What, four guys every year since 2008?
Pretty good.
Got to keep the streak alive, and hopefully it stays alive. And if it's Drake Stoops that keeps the streak alive, this fan base is going to go nuts. It's going to be awesome.
Yep, it is. I agree.
Let's finish up with our winners and losers of the week. But first.
All right, listen up, Oklahoma sports fans. Don't miss your chance to meet some local star athletes and support our state. Join OU legend Sterling Shepard, OU pitcher Kelly Maxwell, Hooper Peyton Verhulst, and more at the Oklahoma State Capitol on April 8th for the American Heart Association's Rally Day. They're rallying for crucial legislation to ensure cardiac emergency plans are in place at schools across Oklahoma. Every year, thousands of young athletes and fans across the country suffer from sudden cardiac arrest. Having proper emergency plans in place saves lives. So mark your calendars for April 8th to rally with Sterling Shepard at the Oklahoma State Capitol. Visit heart.org/Oklahoma for more information.
And all you grill masters out there, listen up. Didier Ranch delivers premium quality beef that is 100% raised in Oklahoma right to your front door. Go to DidierRanch.com. That's DidierRanch.com to order one of their premium quality beef boxes and use promo code Oklahoma15 for 15% off your order. Filet, ribeye, New York strip, sirloin, steak burgers, they've got it all, and they ship anywhere in the continental U.S., and Oklahomans can get their deliveries in 1 to 2 days. The only thing better than having a lot of premium beef on the O-line and D-line is having premium beef delivered right to your front door. Diddy Ranch, tradition tastes better. You know you messed up the order, right?
I know I did.
The look
on your
face.
As soon as you started reading that, I was like, oh my God, I'm so dumb. Oh, I had my screen scrolled to the wrong ad.
We'll hit the other ad reads during before my winner and loser. As always said, kick us off. Who do you have as your winner of the week?
The NFL. How about this? The kickoff rule change. The owners have okayed it. I think it's awesome. Now, we saw something similar with the XFL, what they did, you know, kicking off from the same spot. The players start closer together, and kickers got to put it in the landing zone. I like this. You know, I've always said, and I firmly believe that special teams should always play an important role in football. And, you know, under the guise of player safety, we've seen some rule changes that have somewhat eliminated special teams from the sport. I think this is a safe way to get kickoffs back. I mean, we want star players with the football in space. Isn't that what we like? And I think this gives you a great opportunity for that. Has to land in between the goal line and the 20. No fair catches. If it goes into the end zone, the offense gets the ball in the 35. If it's short of that or goes out of bounds, you get it on that. Was it the 40? Is that right?
Yeah.
So I think it's, and if it hits in the landing zone and rolls into the end zone, it's a touchback on the 20. So I think it's kind of the best all the way around. There's pressure on the kickers to put it in that landing zone so you get a return, and there's penalties for both. You know, if you don't get it, if you don't catch the ball and it rolls into the end zone, you only get it on the 20, which seems like we've been docked 5 points after the, you know, the 25-yard starting line, yard line. So I love it. I think it's great. I welcome more football, not the formality of kick it out of the end zone and hit a commercial break, and then we'll come back and start the football up again.
I like it. Now, you said something that I think is interesting. You said it's going to put some pressure on kickers to put it in the landing zone. It could also put some pressure on maybe a defensive back that kicked in high school or a wide receiver that kicked in high school. They can put it in the landing zone. I'll be shocked if there's some teams that don't try some stuff like that, especially in preseason games. Because with their the ball is going to be returned a lot.
Get
a lot more
guy out there.
You want an athletic guy that can tackle at the kicker spot. And there are plenty of guys out there that are athletic enough to hit it in the landing zone. So that's where I'm looking at. Okay, which teams?
Safety, yeah.
Yeah, which teams have a safety that can kick it into the landing zone and be an 11th guy on the kickoff coverage team? And then who's going to be brave enough to load up on O-linemen on the return team? Who's going to do it? I want to see it. I want to see big bodies out there on the kickoff return team because they're only 5 yards apart. If the guys are going to try to run around him and beat him with speed, it takes a while to run around big fellas. So the cat and mouse of this, in all seriousness, that's going to be the fun part. What kind of return concepts can people come up with? Like, is Kyle Shanahan all of a sudden going to be taking over kickoff return duties for the 49ers and they're running like trap on one side and a pin pull concept on the other as a return? The creativity that I think this is going to inspire from NFL teams in the return game, I think it's going to be awesome, man.
No, I totally agree. I like it. And that reminds me of something funny. So, and I may have said this before, but when I played at OU, so I played soccer my whole life. The only year I didn't play soccer was my senior year of high school before I went to college. So I told Coach Venables one day, I was like, you know, I should really be the kicker and kick off. And he's like, what are you talking about? It's like, no one accounts for the kicker in the blocking scheme. Like, you can't block the kicker. I'd be able to kick off and run down unblocked on every single play. And I could see his eyes like light up. The gears were spinning. So that was pretty funny. And the other thing is, we used to have a kickoff return. They called it Irish right or left, because I don't know if you remember, like in 99, they ran it against Notre Dame and Brandon Daniels scored a touchdown. It's basically power. You got a double team here. You got a guy that comes across and kicks out, and then you lead up with the off guy up through there. So I think it's, you could see some stuff like that, and there's going to be a learning curve, and like the market will figure out what's the best way to attack it. But I love it. I think it's going to be, cause we got to see it in the XFL. It's entertaining. It's like, you know, they were all running like a big stretch zone play or something like that, but you'll start to see some.
Don't get me that excited. Relax. Is it getting hot in here?
Yeah. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. I'm thrilled they did it.
I am as well. I saw that 22% of kickoffs were returned last season in the NFL. So I think that is going to go way up, and it's going to change how teams construct their roster. I don't think for the most part teams really factored kickoff or kickoff return into their roster decisions anymore. That is going to change. I text the old belldozer. I said, dude, you're going to play 5 more years. Kickoff return specialist, just blocking the hell out of guys. So it's going to be interesting to see how it affects things in that way as well.
And, you know, we've seen some really good returners, obviously, in the NFL. But as things change, there's been a much more of a reluctance to put your star players out there on kickoff, because it's just, I mean, if you're going to return one, you're running full speed into 10 guys that are, it's just, I mean, it could be scary to put a $20 million a year player out there that's one of your star guys. This is a pretty low impact way to get like running backs. I saw Cordero Patterson signed yesterday. Like, he's a kickoff return special. He's a big physical guy. And like guys like that, I think are going to be, you know, Joe Mixon returned kickoffs, you know, like big running backs that have experience doing that. I think it's an extra way to get them 4 or 5 carries where they're in the open field.
Going to be fun. It's just going to be more entertaining than it going score, commercial, kickoff, commercial. It's just going to be, at least you're going to get a little action if they throw it to commercial right afterwards. So it should be fun.
Smart guys changing that rule.
Who do you have as your loser of the week?
The idiots that implemented the hip drop tackle rule in the NFL.
Wait.
Bunch of idiots.
The NFL's your winner and your loser because of the rule changes? Okay. All right.
Winner and loser. Yeah. I think that this is, I think it's incredibly stupid. I think it's very difficult to legislate. You can't tackle high. And so the real problem is, when all the concussion crap came out, there was this big effort to start teaching the rugby tackle or the hawk tackle, where, like, for guys my age, we grew up, when you tackle, you get your head across the ball carrier, right? And if you don't get your head across, it's a minus, because it's an arm tackle if the head is behind, right? Well, after the concussion stuff, they wanted to get the head out of it, so they teach tackling with the head behind, the rugby tackle. So that's been taught now for what probably 10 years or more, when everyone's finally adopted that. They do it at OU. I think it's stupid, but that's just me. whenever you tackle that way, when a guy is to the side of you and you're lunging and you grab around the waist and your head is behind, your body naturally swings off the ground. If you're not in a position to keep your feet and run your feet on contact, rarely are you in a perfect position to make a tackle like that. You're often lunging at guys and trying to grab around the waist. Your body swings. I don't know how you legislate that. Like, if you're in that position, do you let go before that happens? I mean, there's been a couple of injuries, but we don't have a massive epidemic of hip drop tackle injuries that have just swept the NFL. It happens, but you can't take injuries out of a physical sport. They would be far better served eliminating turf fields than they would tinkering with these stupid tackle rules.
And I know there's a lot of people out there going, well, just put them in flags. This is where this is headed anyways. I just think they made a rule for something that's not really a huge issue. And yeah, did it suck watching Mark Andrews get hurt on a play like that? Absolutely. I think we can all agree. We don't want to see Mark Andrews get hurt on a play like that. But Mark Andrews is also a massive athletic dude. How are you supposed to get him on the ground? That's the thing is
255 pounds.
I'm interested in how defensive players are going to be coached to avoid this. Or is it just one of those things where defensive coaches say, hey, I don't know what to tell you. But just get the guy on the ground and we'll live with
every now. Yeah.
Like should every defensive coaching staff and like the front office just say, hey, we have set aside a hip drop tackle fund. Just go play. Go get the guys on the ground. Whatever happens, happens. If you get fined and the penalty, hey, we'll just take it out of the fund. Like, it continues to get more and more difficult for defensive players to get offensive players on the ground. And sometimes the physics is just going to result in the guy falling on the back of the guy's legs. It's just how science works. I don't know.
Yeah, it's brutal. I totally understand that we all want the same thing. We all want the star players to play every game. We want the quarterback, like teams fall apart massively when the starting quarterback isn't out there, right? So we want to keep him healthy. So we put these rules in. Well, teams can fall apart or it's not nearly as fun whenever star players get injuries. So we don't want them getting targeted and getting concussed. Let's take that out. Well, we don't want them getting rolled up. Let's take that out. We don't want them getting tackled by the horse collar because we want them to be able to continue on an 80-yard touchdown run because it's the only way to tackle a guy from behind pretty much. But we don't want him getting hurt. I understand that, but get your roster better. You know, I understand like both sides of it, but to me, there has to be a point where you stop, you don't legislate out the reason why everyone watches football. Why is it so compelling? Because it's dangerous, right? If NASCAR or Formula One was like driving to the grocery store, no one would watch it. It's on the edge. There's danger involved. You never want injuries, but the reason it's compelling is because it's inherent in the sport. When you take that out, I mean, and it's just a slow creep, you know, it's just every year, every couple of years, there's a new little rule that goes in. And before long, it's unrecognizable whenever you look at what it used to be.
If it ends up being a penalty that like a team gets a really, really big third down stop in a playoff game to get the ball back with the chance to go win the game, that's the nightmare scenario for the NFL if it has that type of impact. But we'll see. I know a lot of people are upset about it. I don't like it, but we'll see what type of actual impact it's going to have. We're not going to know until they play the games.
It may not be a big emphasis, but and it may have to be blatant, but I don't know. It's
One thing I will be pissed if they review like 5 or 6 tackles each game for it, and that slows down the flow of the game.
I mean, if you can't see it like happen instantly, then and if it's like borderline at all, then you shouldn't have to go to a replay to make that call.
Yeah, remember when you can challenge pass interference and it only took us a couple of weeks and everyone, this is stupid, and it went away. Maybe it'll end up being like that. We'll see.
Yeah. Oh, I would even say if the player gets hurt, then it's a penalty. If he doesn't get hurt, then it's not a penalty.
It's not the worst way of looking at it.
Yeah.
All right, let's get to my winner and loser. Ted, you're going to have the garage read right here. But first,
head to the garage for hand-smashed patties, butter-toasted buns, and ice-cold beer. It's the perfect spot to watch any big game. And with all the garage locations being open to 10 p.m. or later every night, it's the go-to late-night spot. Visit eatatthegarage.com to find a location near you and order online from the garage in your neighborhood.
And attention, business owners, you need Insurica in your life. Insurica is one of the country's largest insurance brokers with 30 offices throughout Oklahoma, Texas, and the Southwest. Insurica is able to customize programs by accessing the latest information from many insurance carriers. They compare and contrast coverage offerings and pricing. It'll design a cost-effective, comprehensive program to meet your business's specific needs. If your business partners with Insurica, you'll save huge amounts of money and take back control of your total cost of risk. If your business wants to be best in class, connect with Insurica at Insurica.com. That's Insurica.com.
And head to opolisclothing.com for our podcast merchandise and the best OU gear out there. That's OPOLISClothing.com. Use promo code TED, TED, for 10% off. It's opolisclothing.com. Use promo code TED for 10% off. Buttery soft and 10% off.
For my winner of the week, thought about going with the Oklahoma City Thunder. Bounced back nicely from the blowout loss to the Bucks. And got a nice win in New Orleans. Now, blew a 20-point lead. But with the way that it looked, with only a couple minutes to go in that game, it felt like the Pelicans had all of the momentum, and the Thunder completely outplayed them in the last 2 minutes of the basketball game. And the reason it was so encouraging is we continue to hear that this team doesn't have any playoff experience. Well, that situation, what were they, down 5 with a little over 2 minutes to go on the road? Seemed like it was a really good atmosphere there in New Orleans. That's as close as you're going to get in the regular season to playoff pressure. You're never going to be able to simulate playoff pressure, but that's about as close as you're going to get in the regular season. And to see them embrace that pressure and completely outplay the opponent, that's encouraging, man. I loved it. Giddy was awesome throughout the game. Dort did such a great job on Zion late in that game, the last couple minutes. There's no doubt Shea's a little banged up, but I'll say this. There's all these people. Don't be this person. You got all these people saying, well, Shea needs to rest. He needs to rest. Shut up. Guess who knows what's best for Shea Gilgeous-Alexander? Him. So if he says, I'm good to play, he's good to play. And I was there at the Utah game when he got dead leg. Didn't look like he felt very good, and he was hobbled the rest of that game. But guess what? He's tough. And I love that he plays through it. He's not 100%. He doesn't care. He can play. If you can play, you play. And I love that mentality, and I love the tone that it sets for the rest of the roster. He could sit out, but he didn't. Was he at his best? No. Did he make huge plays in the last 2 minutes of that game? Yes. Dude, just all this, that we have been brainwashed as NBA fans. Like, if a guy looks hobbled at all, oh, he needs to rest. He needs to sit out. No, no, no. I love that he played. I love it because I just think it sets a tone, Ted.
Yeah. Well, it sets a tone, and the body responds to action way more than it responds to rest. And I mean, there's probably conflicting opinions on it, but I think you heal way faster whenever you try and play through it than whenever you sit your ass on a training table for however long. So I like it.
I'm with
has
you.
I know the trade deadline is come and gone, but has all of the Giddy hate, has that died down a little bit? I mean, early on people were like adamant that they had to trade him.
He has played well in March. And really, I think people's opinion now that, you know, kind of the off the court stuff is kind of fading. Their opinion is basically, hey, is he hitting threes or not?
Right.
And I think he's shooting 40% from three in the month of March.
That'll do it.
So it seems like them trading for Gordon Hayward maybe gave him a little nudge to get it in the gear. And Hayward hasn't been much of a factor, and Giddy has stepped his stuff up. So we'll see. But also, Chet had one of the coolest two-hand blocks you'll ever see in that game. He continues to be so good protecting the rim. It's fun to watch, man. Continue 50 wins for the Thunder. How about that?
Fantastic. 50
wins, 11 games to go. Gosh, love this team. But my winner of the week, ESPN, ABC, the mothership. Because for a little bit, it looked like Caitlin Clark and Iowa were going to lose to West Virginia.
Yeah.
And those executives had to be sweating. But Iowa was able to finish the last couple minutes of that game strong, get the win. 32-8-3 for Caitlin Clark. The officiating was interesting. Now, West Virginia style, very aggressive defensively. But there were certainly some interesting calls in that game. But you look at the TV numbers, Ted. Did you see that?
No.
If you're ESPN, I mean, you're absolutely thrilled that West Virginia wasn't pulling off the upset, because that game drew an average of 4.9 million viewers, which is a record for women's college basketball outside of the Final Four in the national championship game. Their first round game, Iowa's first round game against Holy Cross, averaged 3.23 million viewers. I mean, Caitlin Clark, she moves the needle, man. So ESPN was thrilled that they were able to get that win.
Yeah, and like any superstar, the obviously has a huge amount of fans that are going to watch her no matter who she plays, and has a huge amount of haters that are going to watch her no matter who she plays, right? Like, it's actually, it works out perfect.
It's the only thing I can compare it to is when Taylor Swift would go to the Chiefs games, like the positive and negative tweets about that, and negative tweets about Caitlin Clark. Like, some people have, they just got too much time on their hands. They're like breaking down her reaction clips. Like, she needs to be a role model. You know what I did? My son loves hoops, loves it. And we go and shoot outside in the driveway multiple times a day. I showed him that clip of Caitlin Clark telling whoever to shut the F up. And I said, son, and he doesn't know what she's saying. He doesn't know what she's saying. I said, son, this is the type of juice you got to play with. Like, it's got to mean something to you. This is how you got to play. And so he went outside. It was shooting baskets. And he just started audibly yelling. I was like, oh, no, what have I done? Yeah, basically, yes. I was like, hey, you're excited. You're having fun. Like, sometimes the juices get flowed. Like, that's how you have to play if you want to be great. And yeah. Some people are so offended by everything. It's hilarious to me.
Well, you know, it's been ingrained in basketball culture that when you're running around in football, like, you run through everything, right? But in basketball, anytime there's like an inadvertent bump, you're like trying to, you know, you're like wobbling every time someone touches you. you're trying to get that whistle, and you got the long hair that's flopping around. You know, she's just trying to get the whistle, man. And if they're going to keep calling it, she's going to keep doing it.
Yeah. There's a little embellishment there, but I just, there's so many people that seem to spend all their free time analyzing every movement of Caitlin Clark on the court. It's kind of strange, but
I'll tell you what's interesting. She reminds me, like, I think that she's probably going to do to the game what Steph Curry did to the NBA. Before Steph Curry, there weren't people launching threes from, it was like, it was a stupid shot whenever you did that, right? And now, like, you see all kinds of people firing, and that's, the game evolved to more of that. And I think it's probably going to be the same in women's hoops.
I think she is by far the biggest star in college basketball right now. Oh, yeah. And I'm really interested to see, I'm interested to see how that translates to the WNBA, but we'll see how deep Iowa can go. They got a bit of a scare.
I think don't you feel like the last two or three years of women's college hoops has to be like their best era ever?
Oh, for sure. I think
there's more household names, and I know you, like, they've had their time when UConn had a bunch of household names and they were just totally running the show, but there's a bunch of really good players on several teams, and it is highly competitive. It's good stuff.
Yeah. I don't know if you've watched Juju Watkins from USC, but whoa. That's what Caleb Williams was doing when he had the pink phone, watching who I think is the best player in women's college basketball. She's good. Brings me to my loser of the week. Actually, I'm not going to do him. I thought about doing him. OU women's basketball. Mm. They had it, man. Just a really rough final 2 minutes against Indiana. Some bad turnovers. Now, Skylar Van's going to want to forget the last minute of that basketball game. They're up 64-60 with 2:41 to go. Got outscored 10-0 until Van got to the free throw line with, 20 seconds to go in the game. Aubrey Jones was fantastic. I thought that she absolutely balled out. The officials did seem to give Indiana a lot of calls. But also, hey, Mackenzie Holmes went to work, and the Sooners didn't have many answers for her, so a massive free throw discrepancy. When you look at the box score, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out that was the biggest difference in the game. Doesn't help when you shoot 4-25 from three, though, Ted. I was heartbroken for Jenny Baranchek and her group. They looked like the better team for a lot of that basketball game.
Yeah, and I know it's frustrating for them. They had a really nice season. And, you know, they've had a couple of really nice seasons. It hasn't translated into a lot of postseason success yet, but I think you've got the right coach, and it's coming. We all know it's coming, right? It's not going to be long before they are going to be ultra competitive and right up there at the top. I feel really strongly about it.
I'm with you. I'm absolutely with you. Now, my loser of the week, we got to talk a little Sweet 16. Right. The, what should we label it? The Cinderella-less Sweet 16, the chalky Sweet 16. I think some people look at it and they're a little disappointed. Now you could cheer for NC State. They may be the squad that a lot of people are looking to get behind because DJ Burns, the big fella, they're the only double digit seed left. And DJ Burns appears to be a man of the people. But other than that, you call it whatever you want. Chalky, I don't care. These matchups are awesome. I really don't mind it. So, yeah, I guess my loser of the week is Cinderella's. But the other Sweet 16 games, like Clemson, Arizona, I think that's going to be an awesome game. Clemson limped into the tournament but has looked really good. And then you look at Arizona,
that was
Caleb
a great
Love.
Game against Baylor too.
Oh my gosh.
That was really competitive. I thought Baylor was going to get it there at the end, but couldn't fight them off.
You've got the last year's title game rematch between San Diego State and UConn, which UConn looks like a wagon.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Got Alabama, North Carolina. Now Alabama has not played well against the elite teams they've played this year, but you never know. You just need one hot shooting night. Illinois, Iowa State, you talk about a clash of styles. Illinois is one of the highest scoring teams in the country. Terrence Shannon is absolutely balling, and we all know how Iowa State wants to play. DJ Otzelberger is going to try to put the Illini in a headlock, brother. So I'm interested in that game. Purdue.
The Illinois-Iowa State game has a lot of interest around the Lehman household. In our family bracket challenge, my wife has Illinois as the national champion. I've got Iowa State as the national champion.
Whoa. Huge, divisive game in the Lehman household.
Could get really weird around here.
I like that. I like that. I don't know how weird Gonzaga-Purdue is going to get, but for some reason, I feel like that's going to be an awesome game. They played early in the season.
Yeah, I think Gonzaga's come on really strong. I think it kind of feels like they are no like long shot, or they're not a Cinderella by any means, but kind of the way they got in and they were a lower seed than you typically see them going against Purdue, I think Gonzaga's got a lot of backers.
Duke, Houston, when you talk about the takes that can come out of one of these games, I think that is that could produce the strongest reaction. If Houston just grinds Duke up and spits them out, first of all, it's going to make a lot of people happy. Mm-hmm. But there will be quite the narrative that Duke is soft and they couldn't handle the physicality. So that's going to be a heck of a game. And then for whatever reason, Creighton, Tennessee, I think that may be the game that has the least sizzle for me. Yeah. I'm not entirely sure why, but dude, Duke, Houston, that's going to be awesome.
No, it is. And I feel like you saw it with Houston at times, saw it with Iowa State, even like North Carolina. I think in that first week coming off the conference tournaments, there's a lot of teams I don't think were playing to their capabilities, whether it's tired legs or whatever. I think you're going to see some really high level basketball this next weekend.
I'm with you. Should be a very fun weekend of college hoops. Birthday shout outs. Happy 6th birthday to Witten, the Star Wars and Minecraft Lego master, Cooper.
Nice. Happy 30th birthday to Ryan Farco.
And happy birthday to Drew Allen. On that note, episode 408, not Drew Allen, the OU quarterback, Drew Allen. Yeah, I saw the same thing. I was like, I know Drew Allen's birthday. I lived with him for 4 years. Episode 408. In the books. We'll have a new podcast that'll drop on Sunday. Programming note, Shane Beamer scheduled to join us next week. So it'll be fun to catch up with the head coach for the Gamecocks. Just a reminder, please subscribe to the podcast wherever you listen to podcasts, and please subscribe to our YouTube channel. Hope you all have a great rest of your week. Have an awesome weekend. And until next time, we appreciate y'all for listening. We always do, Oklahoma. Take care of each other.
Just one more time.